some information about dementia. If you're moving the person to the nursing home from a hospital, you may have had little or no time to search for a home and to plan an orderly transition. You may be exhausted by all that had to be done in a few hours or days. If this happens, at least try to go with the person to the home and to have some familiar things waiting there for him. Adjusting to a new life. The changes imposed by living in a nursing home or other residential care facility require major adjustments for most people. Making these adjustments takes time and energy for staff and family, as well as for the person who has dementia, and it can be a painful process. Remember that a move does not mean the end of family relationships. In fact, many people find that their relationship with the impaired person improves. Your relative can continue to be a part of the family, even though he has moved into a setting that better meets his needs. There are some practical suggestions for things that you can do to make the adjustment to the new home easier. However, we know that the most difficult part of the adjustment may be the feelings you and your relative have about it. Visiting. It's important to your family member that you visit. Even if he doesn't recognize you or doesn't seem to want you there, your regular visits help at some level to sustain his awareness that he's valued and is part of a family. Frequent visits from his family can also prompt better care from the staff. Sometimes people beg to be taken home or cry when their family leaves after a visit. It's tempting to avoid such scenes by visiting less often, but usually the benefits to everyone from the visit far outweigh the upset that comes at the end. Expressing grief and anger at being in a nursing home is understandable. You may be distressed by the atmosphere of the nursing home or by the other sick people you see there. Family members find it painful to see a loved one so impaired. Because dementia interferes with communication and comprehension, families can have difficulty thinking of things to do when they visit. There are things you can do to make visiting easier. You can help your relative orient himself in his new home. While you're visiting, explain again why he's there. For example, say, "You're too sick to stay at home." Review what the daily routines of the home are. Make a schedule for him if he can read it. Help him find the bathroom, the dining room, the television, and the phone. Help him find his things in his closet. Think of a way to identify the door of his room as his. Decorate his room with things that are his. Tell him exactly when you will visit next and write this down for him so he can use it to remind himself. Some families write a letter to the resident mentioning highlights of the most recent visit and the time of the next. The staff can read the letter with the resident between visits to reassure him that you do come frequently. Try to continue to involve him in family outings. If he's not acutely ill, take him for rides, shopping, home for dinner or overnight, or to church. Even if he resists going back, he may eventually come to accept this routine, and he'll benefit from the knowledge that he's still part of the family. Select activities that do not overly stress or tire him. Occasionally, it continues to be difficult to get the person to return. In this instance, it's better to visit him at the home. Help him to remain a part of special family events, such as birthdays and holidays. Even if he's depressed or confused, he usually should still be informed of sad events. Telephone calls between visits help a forgetful person keep in touch and remind him that he's not forgotten. Don't expect him to be able to remember to call you. Landline phones are becoming a thing of the past and are not always available in people's rooms. The facility office should have a telephone and help the person to call or receive calls if he's unable to do so on his own. Take an old photograph album, an old dress from the attic, or some other item that may trigger memories of the past and encourage the person to talk about things he remembers from long ago. If he always tells you the same story, accept this. It's your listening to him and your presence that communicate that you still care about him. Talk about the family, neighbors, gossip, the local sports team. Even if he's not fully aware of the issues, he can enjoy the act of listening and talking. Being together is what's most important to both of you. Exactly what you talk about is not so important. People who have dementia may not be interested in some topics, such as current events. If he seems restless, do not insist on bringing him up to date on information. Be sympathetic about his complaints. Listening to the things he complains about tells him that you care about him. He may make the same complaint over and over because he forgets that he told you. Listen anyway. It's your empathy he needs. Investigate his complaint thoughtfully, however, before you complain to the staff, act on it, or decide not to pursue it further. Remember that his perception of things may not be accurate, although there might be an element of truth in his complaint. Sing old familiar songs. Don't be surprised if other residents drift by to listen or participate. Music is a wonderful way to share. Nobody will care if your singing isn't very good. Take along tape recordings of the family or the children. Make a personal history scrapbook telling the story of the person's life, where he grew up, when he married, his children, his job, hobbies, and so on. Write in large letters. Illustrate it with photographs, clippings, bits of fabric, medals, and so on. Making the scrapbook can occupy both of you for several visits. Reviewing it may help him recall his past. Even if he doesn't remember, he may be reassured that he has a past. Make a personal history box. Put in items that are safe and will trigger memories, treasured keepsakes, antique kitchen or farm tools that will be familiar to him, assorted bolts for a handyman, or spools of thread for a seamstress. Look for items with interesting colors, weights, textures, and sizes. The person may enjoy sorting and touching the things in this box. You and the staff can use it to trigger memories. Include a card that gives information about the items. This is an old-fashioned apple corer, like the one Mother used when she made apple butter for her 5 children. Dad wore these dancing shoes until he was 70. If there's no place to store a scrapbook or box, just bring it with you on visits. Use it for something to do with your family member. Avoid too much excitement. Your arrival, news, and conversation may overexcite the person and could precipitate a catastrophic reaction. Do things that show that you're interested in his new home. Walk around it together. Read the bulletin board to him. Talk to his roommate or other residents and staff. Remind him to smell the flowers and see the birds when you walk around outside. Help him care for himself. Eat a meal together. Do his hair. Rub his back. Hold hands. Help him get some exercise. Bring a treat that you can eat together while you're there. Avoid bringing food the staff must store. If the person has difficulty eating, you may want to come at mealtimes and help feed him. If other confused or upset residents interrupt your visit, you may be able to tell them gently but clearly not to talk with you now. If necessary, ask where there's a more private place for you to visit. Sometimes visits go more smoothly if you include one or two other residents in a simple activity. If he enjoys it, and if it does not precipitate a catastrophic reaction, take along children, one at a time, or a pet, ask the staff in advance. Seeing the people in a home is usually helpful for children. You can prepare the child by talking about the things he might see, such as catheters or intravenous tubes, and explaining that they help such people maintain their bodily functions. Sometimes a person is so ill that he can't talk or recognize you or respond to you. It's hard to know what to say to such a person. Try holding hands, rubbing the person's back, or singing. One minister said this about his visits. I've grown in these visits. I am so used to doing that it took me a long time to accept that there is nothing I can do for people who have dementia. I've learned to just sit, to just share being, and not to feel I have to do or talk or entertain. It's not easy to share family life and love a person who is in an institution and who is in the late stages of dementia, but perhaps you will find your own meaning in doing so, as this man has. Repeating the same conversations or activities may get boring, but keep in mind that many people who have dementia have such severe memory impairment that they don't remember what they did 5 or 10 minutes ago. Repetition of enjoyed activities may give them pleasure, even if it's frustrating for you. your own adjustment. You also will have changes in your life when a family member has moved to a new care setting. If the person lived with you, and especially if he's your spouse, the adjustment may be difficult. You may be tired from the efforts of arranging for the placement, and on top of your fatigue, you may feel sad at the changes that have occurred. The move may intensify your feelings of grief and loss. At the same time, you may wish that you could somehow have kept the person at home, and you may feel guilty that this wasn't possible. You may have mixed feelings of relief and sorrow, guilt and anger. It is a relief not to have to carry the burden of care, to be able to sleep or read uninterrupted. Still, you probably wish things were different, and that you could have continued to care for this person yourself. Families often tell us that in the very first few days, they feel lost. Without the usual demands of caring for a sick person, they can't decide what to do with themselves. At first, you may not be able to sleep through the night or relax enough to watch television. The trips to the home may be tiring, especially if it's some distance from where you live. The visits may be depressing. Sometimes people who have dementia are temporarily worse until they adjust to a new setting, and this can upset you. Sometimes, too, the other people in the home are depressing to see. Staff members are geared to provide care for many people, and you may not feel that your loved one is receiving the individual care that you would like. Other things about the home or the staff may upset you. It's not unusual for family members to feel angry with the staff from time to time. If you're upset with the home or the staff, you have a right to discuss your concerns with them, to be given answers, and not to jeopardize the person's care or status in the home by doing this. It's against federal law for a nursing home to discharge a resident because his family raised questions about his care. If there's a social worker in the home, she may help you work out your concerns. If there is no social worker, discuss your concerns in a calm, matter-of-fact way with the administrator or the director of nursing. Often, things are better after placement, especially when they have been difficult at home. With other people responsible for daily care, you and the person who has dementia can relax and enjoy each other again. Because you're not always tired, and because you can get away from his irritating behaviors, you may be able to enjoy your relationship for the first time in a long while. If other family members don't visit, it may be because they find it very hard to face visiting in a nursing home or don't know what to talk about. If people in your family react this way, try to understand that this may be their way of grieving, and that you may not be able to change them. Tell them what you have learned from your visits. The most important thing you can do is to be with the person. What you say or do matters much less. Sometimes family members spend many hours at the home helping with the resident. Only you can decide how much time you should spend visiting. Ask yourself if part of your reason for being there has to do with your loneliness and grief, and if it might be better if you spent less time there, so the resident can make his adjustment to his new home. Time does pass, and gradually the acute phase of adjustment also passes. As time goes on, you'll settle into a routine of visits. It's natural for you gradually to build a life apart from the person who has changed so much. When problems occur in the nursing home or other residential care facility. Sometimes serious problems about patient care do arise. Mr. Rosen says, "My father has Alzheimer's disease and we had to put him in a nursing home. He got terribly sick and was transferred to a hospital where they said his condition was made worse because he was dehydrated. Apparently the home failed to give him enough fluid. I feel like I am guilty of not checking up on this, and I feel like I can't send him back to a home that neglects him." As you know, people who have dementia can be difficult to care for, especially in the late stages of the disease. Mr. Rosen feels that complaining to the nursing home staff will only make them angry. If he tries to move his father to another home, he may find there are no other homes that are any better, or that will accept a person who has Alzheimer's disease, or someone who is receiving Medicaid. The dilemma you, Mr. Rosen, and many other families face lies not so much with one home, but with national policy, value systems, federal training budgets, and so forth. These things are gradually changing through the efforts of organizations such as the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, CMS, the Alzheimer's Association, and the National Consumer Voice for Quality Long-Term Care. We hope you will not encounter problems like this. If you do, first take time to consider what kind of care you can reasonably expect. You should expect that the person will be kept as well as possible, well-fed and hydrated, protected from obvious risks, and clean and comfortable. His wishes should be known to the staff and accommodated to as much as is reasonable and possible. He should be engaging in activities that are appropriate for his level of illness and not ignored. Concurrent illness should be recognized, and residents should be watched for drug reactions and interactions. However, people who have dementia are difficult to care for, and sometimes the facility can be wrong if they do and wrong if they don't. It's often not possible to treat every condition completely or to solve every problem. For example, allowing a person to walk independently may be good for his heart, fitness, and self-confidence, but may result in a fall. Asking the staff about the risks and benefits of the care they're providing and how they balance these, sometimes conflicting goals, can help you decide what risks you're willing to take. Staff problems are a frequent cause of inadequacy in care. A facility cannot give the kind of individual care to one person that you could give at home. However, if there are not enough staff members to keep residents clean, comfortable, and fed, and their medical needs monitored, then something's wrong. The National Consumer Voice for Quality Long-Term Care publishes information about laws governing nursing home quality. Reading this material will help you judge what you can expect from a home. Talk over your concerns honestly but calmly with the administrator, the director of nursing, or the social worker, and offer her the information you have about the care of people who have dementia. How do they respond? Do they thank you for talking to them and say they will take care of the problem, or do they make excuses or brush you off? If a physician or other professional should be aware of the problem, ask for that person's support in correcting the situation. Mr. Rosen said, "The doctor at the hospital was so helpful. She called the nursing home and talked to them, explaining that his fluid intake needed to be monitored even when he kept assuring them that he was drinking, because people who have dementia can easily become dehydrated." If talking with people at the facility doesn't solve the problem, contact the local nursing home ombudsperson, usually in the Office on Aging. They have resources to investigate the issue and help you. As a final resort, report the problem to the state nursing home inspector's office. However, problems are often most successfully solved by working informally with the administrator and the staff of the home. The problem may be that the staff needs more information about how to care for people who have dementia. The Alzheimer's Association has information about training resources. Encourage all levels of staff, from the nurses and administrators to the aides, to get training. It's against the law for a facility to discharge a resident because the family has made a complaint. It's also against the law to mistreat a resident whose family has complained. You must closely monitor the care your family member receives. Sexual issues in nursing homes or other care facilities. Sometimes people who have dementia undress themselves in public, masturbate, or make advances to staff members or other residents. The sexual needs and behaviors of residents in nursing homes raise controversial issues. Sexual behavior in a nursing home differs in significant ways from such behavior at home. It no longer is a private matter, because in one way or another it has an impact on other residents, the staff, and the families of residents. Sexual behavior also raises the ethical issue of whether a person who is impaired can or should retain the right to make sexual decisions for himself. While our culture seems to be saturated with talk about sex, it's usually the sexuality of the young and beautiful that's being discussed. Many people are uncomfortable considering the sexuality of the old, the unattractive, the disabled, or those who have dementia. Nursing home staff members also often feel uncomfortable. If the staff reports what is considered inappropriate behavior to you, remember that much of the behavior that at first seems sexual may be behavior of disorientation and confusion. You and the nursing home staff can work together to help the person know where he is, when he can use the toilet, and where he can undress. Often, all that is needed is to say, "It isn't time to go to bed yet. We'll put your pajamas on later." Distractions, such as offering a glass of juice, are helpful. People who have dementia may become close friends with another resident, often without a sexual relationship. Friendship is a universal need that does not stop when one has dementia. Occasionally, one hears stories about people getting in bed with other residents in a nursing home. This isn't hard to understand when we consider that most of us have shared a bed with someone for many years and have enjoyed the closeness this sharing brings. The person may not realize where he is or whom he is with. He may not realize that he is not in his own bed. He may think that he is with his spouse. Remember that assisted living facilities and nursing homes can be lonely places where there isn't much opportunity for being held and loved. How you respond to such an incident depends on your attitudes and values and on the response of the nursing home. Some residents masturbate. The staff usually ignores such behavior if it occurs in the privacy of the person's room. If it occurs in public, the resident should be quietly returned to his room. Flirting is a common and socially acceptable behavior for men and women. In a nursing home, a person may flirt to reinforce old social roles. It makes a person feel younger and more attractive. Tragically, dementia may cause a person to do this clumsily, making offensive remarks or inappropriate gestures. Inappropriate remarks and behaviors that are sexual in nature are more common in people who have frontotemporal dementia and occur because disinhibited behavior is a common result of damage to the brain's frontal lobes. When the staff is trained to remind the person matter-of-factly and kindly that this behavior is not acceptable, it sometimes fades away. If it persists, the person may need to be placed in an area where contact with others can be observed by staff. Residents can be provided with other opportunities to re-experience their social roles. The question of sexually intimate behavior occurring between residents has legal implications, because it requires that both parties are competent to participate in sexual activity. When either staff or family raises a concern about potential sexual activity, it's appropriate to involve a professional who can determine whether the parties are competent. While this might seem intrusive, the presence of dementia raises the significant possibility that a person lacks capacity, is incompetent, to give knowing consent. However, even when people are found to be competent, family members might be upset. If this occurs, we recommend that facilities convene a meeting that includes the person who has dementia, the family, competency experts, and appropriate facility staff to discuss the issue. Sexual intimacy between married couples raises other issues in long-term care. If there's no objection, then there seem to be no grounds to raise a concern. However, if the person who has dementia appears distressed, then the facility should follow the steps we just discussed. This issue is more likely to be contentious when stepchildren are involved. The right of adults to engage in sexual intimacy is considered a privacy right that is protected by the Constitution. But when cognitive impairment is present, there is also an obligation to protect the vulnerable. Ideally, these issues can be discussed with all appropriate parties, and a solution acceptable to all involved can be reached. Legal adjudication is very rarely necessary. Chapter 17. Preventing and Delaying Cognitive Decline. Several recent reports have found that dementia is declining in frequency. The reasons for this encouraging finding are unknown, but one possibility is that it's the result of steps people have been taking to lower their risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. One of the challenges in studying prevention is the need to distinguish between age-associated changes in thinking that seem to be normal and the earliest symptoms of dementia. Usual age-associated changes. To begin, we emphasize what we state throughout this book, cognitive decline that results in an impaired ability to carry out everyday tasks is not inevitable. Many people live their entire lives with fully intact mental function. In fact, wisdom, accumulated knowledge, and expert skills may increase as we age. Jane worries because she finds herself doing things like walking into the kitchen and then not being able to remember why she went there. This kind of absent-mindedness, sometimes called a senior moment, is not a sign of impending dementia. Recalling words and speed of mental performance. Two changes in thinking are a part of usual or normal aging. These changes begin as early as people's 40s, but are often noticeable only when we reach our 60s or 70s. The first is a slowing of mental processing. As we age, the brain remains as able as ever to process information, evaluate its meaning, and decide on a course of action based on what it has processed, but it does so more slowly. This partly explains why it takes longer to remember words and facts in later life. It's best dealt with by taking one's time and not being rushed when trying to remember something or making a decision. Difficulty coming up with names and words is the second change associated with normal aging. The senior moment that Jane experienced is an example. With time, the thought, name, or word pops into memory, but it may take seconds or even minutes. Studies have repeatedly shown that hints, clues, and having choices. Did you come into the kitchen to get silverware or consult a cookbook? Improve this difficulty in memory recall. This improvement with hints tells us that the word or name is still in our memory but is harder to access or retrieve from our memory storage system. In contrast, the memory loss seen in Alzheimer's disease is permanent. The memory is gone and does not significantly improve with hints or cueing. Risk factors identify potential targets and possible approaches for decreasing the risk of dementia. One approach to preventing or delaying the onset of Alzheimer's disease and other dementias is to identify risk factors for developing them. Here we discuss several categories of risk factors that have been identified and the evidence that addressing them lowers the risk of developing dementia. Cardiovascular factors. High blood pressure in midlife, high cholesterol, and obesity are risk factors for developing Alzheimer's disease and vascular dementia. Since these are also risk factors for heart attack and stroke, it's not clear whether the mechanism is the same. While it has yet to be proven that addressing these risk factors will lower the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease, the clear benefit of lowering heart attack and stroke risk makes it important to speak with your physician if you have hypertension, have high cholesterol, or are overweight. Physical exercise. Many studies show that people who developed dementia had been less physically active than people who did not develop dementia in the prior 5 to 10 years. This is indirect support for the idea that physical exercise prevents or delays the onset of cognitive decline, but it does not prove that hypothesis. It's possible that lower rates of exercise are a result of the dementia. Studies in animals genetically programmed to develop Alzheimer's brain changes show that exercise can lessen the development of the plaques characteristic of Alzheimer's disease, a finding that supports the importance of exercise in prevention. The benefits of physical exercise in preventing heart attack and stroke are well established. If exercise also lowers the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease, then a regular exercise program would have a triple benefit, lowering the risk of stroke, heart attack, and Alzheimer's disease. For this reason, the Centers for Disease Control, CDC, recommends 30 minutes of physical exercise 5 days a week for all people able to participate. After checking with your doctor to make sure it's safe to exercise, begin slowly and gradually build up to the recommended target. Even a short walk every day is good for you. Exercise is also a part of weight loss programs. Since excessive weight is another risk factor for Alzheimer's disease, regular exercise may prevent Alzheimer's disease through multiple mechanisms. Several studies suggest that regular physical exercise may slow the progression of dementia and can help reduce agitation in people who have dementia. Social and intellectual activity. Studies comparing people who do and do not develop dementia have also shown that those who do more socially are less likely to develop dementia. Just as with physical activity, these studies do not allow us to determine the direction of cause. It's also possible that the very beginnings of dementia cause people to be less socially and intellectually active. Studies of mice and rats genetically programmed to develop the plaque lesions of Alzheimer's disease in their brains have found that being raised in a stimulating environment decreases the number of plaque lesions in the brain, leads to less brain shrinkage, as seen on MRI, and results in less memory impairment. Contrary to what was long thought, we now know that humans continue to make new brain cells throughout life. These new cells form in the hippocampus, the part of the brain essential for the formation of new memories. This exciting finding has spurred the development of many memory stimulation programs, particularly computer-based activities. Long-term studies have shown that such mental exercises can improve performance on that specific cognitive test, but there's no direct evidence that cognitive or social stimulation programs lower the risk of developing dementia. One of the challenges in studying mental and social stimulation is that the changes in the brain that lead to Alzheimer's disease begin 15 to 20 years before symptoms become noticeable. This means that prevention would be most effective if begun in people's 40s and 50s. Many people who are physically, mentally, and socially active throughout their lives develop dementia. So these actions cannot completely override the other genetic and environmental factors that cause dementia. The FDA has fined companies for claiming that computer programs prevent dementia. But if you find mentally and socially stimulating games fun and can afford them, there's no harm in trying them. There are many other ways to remain mentally active. Even if they don't prevent dementia, they may improve quality of life. Reading, traveling, and participating in hobbies you have long enjoyed are all mentally stimulating. Even if you develop health issues that limit participation, you can often modify them and remain active. For example, when the painter Henri Matisse's health declined in old age and left him unable to paint, he continued to create artworks by cutting large shapes out of colored paper. These bold designs are among his most beautiful works. Diet. Several recent studies have supported the idea that following a Mediterranean diet delays the onset of dementia. This diet emphasizes eating fruits, vegetables, and healthy fats, such as olive oil or canola oil, consuming very little red meat, and eating fish or shellfish twice a week, avoiding those that are high in mercury. It also encourages the use of herbs and spices instead of salt to season food, eating nuts, and drinking red wine in moderation. These diets also lower the risk of heart attack and stroke. There are many websites and cookbooks that will help you plan a Mediterranean diet. If you begin a new diet or exercise program, ask yourself if you can afford it. Can you maintain it over time? Starting and then stopping within days or weeks will have no long-term effect on your health. Vitamin B12, folic acid, calcium, vitamin D, and fish oil have been promoted as reducing the risk of developing dementia, but there's no evidence that they are effective in preventing Alzheimer's disease. Vitamin B12 can improve and sometimes totally reverse the dementia caused by pernicious anemia, a disease that results either from an inability to absorb the vitamin or from very low intake of the vitamin. But pernicious anemia is a rare cause of dementia today, although it should always be measured during an evaluation of new-onset dementia. Vitamin B1 prevents the development of Korsakoff's amnestic syndrome, a rare cause of memory impairment. Antioxidants are also promoted as potential dementia preventers. No studies have shown them to be preventive, but they are known to prevent brain damage in studies of animals and cell cultures. Fruits such as blueberries that are high in antioxidants are part of a Mediterranean diet. Ginkgo biloba, turmeric, and ginseng have long been promoted as cognition enhancers and dementia preventers. Ginkgo has been widely studied and has not been shown to prevent dementia. Ginseng and turmeric are less well studied, but there's no evidence that they are beneficial. In recent years, coconut oil and jellyfish fluorescent protein have also been promoted as preventing and treating dementia, but no well-designed studies support these claims. Education. Many studies show that receiving more education early in life is associated with a lower risk of developing dementia. Sometimes this research is cited as supporting the claim that mental stimulation might be preventive. Whether this finding is explained by the benefits of early life schooling or is attributable to the fact that it's harder to detect the beginnings of dementia in better educated people has not been determined. Diabetes. Diabetes is a well-established risk factor for developing Alzheimer's disease and vascular dementia. The mechanisms by which this occurs are under intense study. It is not known whether better control of blood sugar will prevent dementia. Depression. Depression in early and mid-life is a risk factor for developing dementia and Alzheimer's disease. The mechanism is unknown. It's not known whether early treatment of depression lowers the risk. Depression occurring for the first time in later life is sometimes the first symptom of a progressive dementia. Toxins. Lead can cause permanent intellectual impairment in children and can cause dementia in adults. Many other heavy metals, including manganese, mercury, thallium, and arsenic, are also toxic to the brain and can cause permanent damage. Organic solvents can cause permanent nervous system damage, including dementia. Avoiding exposure to these toxins and following safety precautions when they are encountered in the workplace should prevent the dementia they can cause. Aluminum has been found in larger than expected amounts in the brains of some people who have Alzheimer's disease. It now seems most likely that this is a result of whatever is causing the dementia rather than a cause of the dementia. People sometimes wonder if they should stop taking antacids or stop cooking in aluminum pans or using deodorant, all sources of aluminum. There is no convincing evidence that the use of these products is a cause of dementia. Treatments that promote the elimination of aluminum and heavy metals from the body do not benefit people who have Alzheimer's disease, and some of these treatments have serious side effects. Head injury. Repeated concussions are known to increase the risk of dementia. Evidence for this first emerged in the 1920s in studies of boxers who were described as punch drunk. They were found to have widespread tangles, one of the two lesions characteristic of Alzheimer's disease, throughout their brains. It is now clear that people with multiple concussions from any cause are at increased risk of developing dementia. The most common finding at autopsy is chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE, defined as the presence of tangles and the tau protein at autopsy in certain areas of the brain. Alzheimer's disease and dementia with Lewy bodies are also more common. CTE has been most widely studied in individuals who sustained concussions in contact sports, such as American football, hockey, and soccer. Soldiers exposed to high-energy explosions are also at risk of developing CTE. It's not clear whether helmets or other protective headgear lower the risk of CTE in athletes or soldiers, but their use is still recommended. Age. Older age is the strongest risk factor for developing Alzheimer's disease. The reasons for this are unknown. It's not yet known whether control of many of the risk factors just discussed will lower this age-associated risk, or if there is some other yet undiscovered aspect of aging that predisposes to cognitive decline. Genetics. Genetics contributes between 35 and 65% of the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease and frontotemporal dementia. Genetics contributes less to dementia with Lewy bodies and dementia due to Parkinson's disease. The genetics of Alzheimer's disease will be discussed later. In the past, genetic risk was seen as discouraging because it was thought that nothing could be done. We now know that the negative consequences of some gene products can be modified if treatment is begun early enough. For example, cognitive impairment due to PKU, phenylketonuria, a disease for which all newborns are screened, can be prevented by placing children who inherit two copies of an abnormal gene on a diet that prevents the disease from manifesting. Medications. The drugs currently approved to treat Alzheimer's disease, cholinesterase inhibitors such as Exelon, Razadine, and Aricept, and memantine, Namenda, do not prevent or slow down the biological progression of the disease. Many other drugs seeking to do so are in development, but none has been proven effective yet. Summary. The prevention and delay of onset of dementia are major focuses of research, but there is still no strong evidence that any approach or intervention is effective. There is strong indirect evidence that control of midlife hypertension and other risk factors for vascular disease might be beneficial. The same is true of physical and mental activity. Their benefit has not been proven, but indirect evidence strongly supports their potential to decrease the risk of vascular dementia and Alzheimer's disease. Since Alzheimer's disease likely has multiple causes, it's quite possible that several or many different preventive therapies will be identified in the future. Chapter 18. Brain disorders and the causes of dementia. Sometimes the brain doesn't work as it should. The problem may be called intellectual disability, dyslexia, dementia, or psychosis. It may be caused by an injury to the brain before or after birth, a genetic condition, chemicals in the environment that damage the brain, interruption of the supply of oxygen to the brain, and many other things. Doctors and scientists group the different things that can go wrong with the brain by their symptoms and how the symptoms have developed or changed over time. Just as fever, coughing, vomiting, and dizziness are symptoms of several different diseases, memory loss, confusion, personality change, and problems with speaking are also symptoms of several diseases. In this chapter, we explain how dementia differs from other problems of the brain, describe some of the most common causes of dementia, and describe some of the other conditions that can impair thinking. The most important thing to learn from this chapter is that you should take the person who has dementia to a specialist who can determine the exact cause of the dementia. Mild cognitive impairment. The term mild cognitive impairment, or MCI, refers to the problems experienced by individuals who report memory difficulties and are found on examination to have mild memory impairment, but who do not meet the criteria for dementia. Mild cognitive impairment appears to be the beginnings of most diseases that cause dementia, including Alzheimer's disease. Follow-up studies have found that 5 to 12% of individuals with MCI develop dementia each year after the diagnosis has been made. But even after 5 years, 40 to 50% either remain in the MCI category, that is, their symptoms have not progressed, or have improved and returned to normal cognition. Some people diagnosed with MCI return to normal within the year after the diagnosis is made. Presumably, they had a reversible cause, such as a transient illness, a medication, or depression. Most of the diseases discussed in this book progress slowly, and it can be difficult to tell the difference between the mild memory changes associated with normal aging and the very earliest symptoms of dementia. Even so, Researchers have begun to study the earliest symptoms of the diseases that cause dementia because early diagnosis will become important when better treatments are developed to prevent dementia. Among the methods of early diagnosis that are being studied are PET scans that use radioactive markers to identify brain amyloid, MRI scans that identify more rapid brain shrinkage than is normal, neuropsychological testing, blood, urine, and spinal fluid tests for protein markers of Alzheimer's disease, and combinations of these. Dementia. Dementia is the medical term for a group of symptoms. It has three characteristics. One, two or more areas of intellectual ability are sufficiently impaired that daily functioning is interfered with. Two, the symptoms begin in adulthood. And three, the person is awake and alert, not drowsy, intoxicated, or unable to pay attention. The declines in intellectual functioning can affect any mental process, including mathematical ability, vocabulary, abstract thinking, judgment, language, and the ability to perform actions that have multiple steps. Not feeling quite as sharp as you used to does not mean that you're developing dementia. The person's ability must decline enough from what was normal for him to interfere with daily functioning. Dementia is different from what was previously called mental retardation and is now named intellectual disability. A person with intellectual disability is impaired from infancy, while a person who has dementia declines from their baseline thinking ability during adulthood. Between 8 and 12% of people over 65 suffer from dementia. At age 65, the rate is only about 1%. At age 75, the rate is about 10%. At age 80, the rate is 20 to 30%. And by age 90, the rate is 30 to 50%. Dementia beginning before age 60 is rare. The symptoms of dementia can be caused by many diseases, probably more than 80. Some of these diseases are treatable, many are not. In some, the dementia can be stopped. In some, it can be reversed. In others, its progression cannot be changed. Some of these diseases are rare. Others are more common, but only rarely cause dementia. Don't assume that dementia is the inevitable result of having a disease other than those, like Alzheimer's, that always cause dementia. Most research indicates that about 50 to 60% of the cases of dementia are caused by Alzheimer's disease, 10% are caused by vascular multi-infarct disease, 10% are caused by a combination of Alzheimer's disease and vascular disease, 5 to 15% are due to Lewy body dementia, and 5% are caused by frontotemporal dementias. About 10% of the cases of dementia are caused by a condition other than these. Several of the diseases that cause dementia are described in this chapter in alphabetical order. Other brain disorders, which impair thinking but don't cause dementia, are discussed at the end of the chapter. If you already have a diagnosis, you may want to listen to only the section describing the disease that you or the person you are caring for has. Alcohol use disorder-associated dementia. People who have a history of drinking problems are at increased risk of developing dementia, though we don't know why. The cause may be a combination of multiple nutritional deficiencies, repeated head trauma from falls and fights, and perhaps the alcohol itself. The symptoms of dementia due to alcohol use disorder are usually different from those of Alzheimer's disease. The person can express himself well, language is rarely affected, but memory impairment, personality change, irritability, and explosiveness are common. These symptoms can be difficult and frustrating for families. Therefore, it's important for caregivers to recognize these differences and try approaches directed toward this form of dementia. The first step is to ensure that the person no longer has access to alcohol and has been treated for his disorder. When there are questions about how disabled the person is or whether his behaviors are deliberate or manipulative, neuropsychological testing is helpful. If the family has painful memories of the person's alcohol abuse, family counseling is helpful. The coping strategies that the family learned to use with the alcoholic person may no longer be appropriate when dementia enters the picture. Some aspects of dementia due to alcohol use disorder are reversible if the person abstains from alcohol, eats a well-balanced diet, takes thiamine supplementation, and avoids head injury. Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's disease was first described by a German psychiatrist, Alois Alzheimer, in 1906, and the condition was named for him. The disease that Dr. Alzheimer originally described affected a woman in her 50s. It was initially called presenile dementia because she was not elderly. Clinicians now believe that the dementia that occurs in elderly people is the same as or very similar to the presenile condition, but younger onset cases are much more likely to have specific genetic causes. Regardless of the age of the person who has the disease is usually called Alzheimer's disease, AD. The symptoms of Alzheimer's disease usually develop very gradually, even imperceptibly, so it's common that the beginnings of the disease are noted only in retrospect. Ultimately, decline is present in many areas of intellectual ability, but early in the illness, memory impairment is the problem noticed by people with the illness as well as their family and doctors. The person is more than a little forgetful. He may forget appointments or conversations that had taken place several hours or days previously. He may have difficulty learning new skills or difficulty with tasks that require abstract reasoning, such as making financial decisions. He may have trouble handling problems at work or may not enjoy reading as much as he used to. His personality may change or he may become depressed. Examination by a clinician knowledgeable about the illness will reveal impairments in more than just memory, but these may not yet interfere with daily functioning. Later, impairments are seen in speaking abilities, language, doing everyday activities, and perceiving or visually processing the world. These symptoms are often not noticeable until the person has had the illness for 3 years. At first, he'll be unable to find the right word for things or will use the wrong word. But later, he'll gradually become unable to express himself. He will also have increasing trouble understanding explanations. He may give up reading or stop watching television. He may have increasing difficulty doing tasks that once were easy for him. His handwriting may change or he may become clumsy. He may get lost easily, forget that he has turned on the stove, misunderstand what's going on in conversation, and show poor judgment. His personality may change, or he may have uncharacteristic outbursts of anger. He'll be unable to plan responsibly for himself. Families often don't notice the beginnings of language and motor problems, but as the disease progresses, these symptoms become apparent. Late in the illness, usually after 6 or 7 years, the person becomes severely impaired, both physically and cognitively. Incontinence and inability to walk are common, and falls become a frequent occurrence. He may be unable to say more than one or two words and may recognize no one or only one or two people. He will need nursing care from family and friends or from professionals. He'll be physically disabled as well as intellectually impaired. Alzheimer's disease usually leads to death in about 9 to 10 years, but it can progress more quickly, 3 to 4 years, or more slowly, more than 20 years. Occasionally, Alzheimer's disease progresses slowly for years and then more rapidly. The relatively stable periods are sometimes called plateaus. Typically, though, the disease is slowly but relentlessly progressive. At autopsy, changes can be seen under a microscope in the physical makeup of the brain of a person who had Alzheimer's disease. These changes include large numbers of two distinct microscopic structures called neuritic plaques and neurofibrillary tangles. They indicate direct damage to brain cells and their connections. A clinical diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease can be made by a specialist during life on the basis of the types of symptoms a person has, the way the symptoms have progressed over time, the absence of any other cause for the condition, and a compatible CT, MRI, or PET scan. However, A definite diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease requires the presence of these specific abnormal structures, neuritic plaques and neurofibrillary tangles, throughout the brain, which at this time can be confirmed only by autopsy. Several blood tests and spinal fluid tests have been developed, but at present they are only slightly more accurate than a diagnosis based on the person's symptoms. Amnestic-Korsakoff syndrome. Amnestic syndrome, previously called Korsakoff syndrome after the Russian psychiatrist who first described it, causes impairment that is limited to memory. Other forms of intellectual ability are relatively intact. Amnestic looks like dementia because the person is normally alert but cognitively impaired, but because it affects only one area of mental function, it is not a true dementia. Corticobasal ganglionic degeneration. Sometimes referred to as CBD, this is a rare cause of dementia that is now included in the group of tauopathy dementias. Early symptoms include clumsiness of one arm caused by an apraxia, an inability to perform movements in spite of normal strength, rigidity, and memory loss. Depression. Infrequently, depression is a cause of dementia. More often, depression is the earliest symptom of dementia that is due to a brain disease such as Alzheimer's disease, stroke, or Parkinson's disease. Occasionally, a physician may not recognize that dementia is caused by depression, but the symptoms of the depression are usually easily recognizable when they cause dementia. People with Alzheimer's disease or vascular dementia also often have symptoms of depression, such as tearfulness, hopelessness, poor appetite, restlessness, or refusing to take part in activities previously enjoyed. They usually are also forgetful and have problems with language and motor skills, symptoms suggesting that they have both depression and Alzheimer's disease or vascular dementia. Whenever a person with a memory problem is depressed, he should be evaluated to determine whether the depression is the cause of his dementia or vice versa. His depression should be treated, whether or not he has an irreversible dementia. Do not allow a physician to dismiss depression. However, keep in mind that while the person's depression may improve, his memory problems may not. Treating a depression even when the person also has an irreversible dementia is important. It often relieves the person's misery, helps him enjoy life, and improves his appetite, and it can reduce distressing behavioral symptoms. The frontotemporal dementias. At the end of the 19th century, the German neurologist and psychiatrist Arnold Pick described a form of dementia in which only single lobes or parts of the brain were affected. In 1901, Alois Alzheimer discovered a specific microscopic abnormality in some people with this lobar dementia and called the structures that he found Pick bodies. It is now known that approximately 5% of people who have dementia have cell loss and brain shrinkage in the frontal lobe, the part of the brain behind the forehead, or the temporal lobes, the parts of the brain underneath the temples. Only one-third of people with frontotemporal dementia, FTD, are found to have Pick bodies at autopsy. Diseases in which these areas of the brain are affected are now considered to be a group of several different illnesses, all of which are characterized by abnormalities in the tau protein and are called tauopathies. When the pathology is primarily in specific lobes of the brain, these diseases are referred to as lobar dementia, frontotemporal lobar dementia, FTLD, or frontotemporal degeneration. Other sections in this chapter describe cortical basal ganglionic degeneration and progressive supranuclear palsy, two diseases that many clinicians and scientists include in the FTD category. Today, two common forms of FTD are recognized. The behavioral form begins with prominent changes in personality and behavior, and it is these symptoms that bring people to have an evaluation. Memory impairment is often minimal, especially at the beginning of the illness. As a result, the beginnings of the disease are often attributed to stress, midlife crisis, or the desire for a change in work or family situation. In the disinhibited form of behavioral or frontal FTD, socially inappropriate behaviors such as making sexually indiscreet remarks, arguing with authority figures, or shoplifting can be the very first signs of the disease. Other people with the behavioral form of FTD develop severe apathy as a first symptom. They seem to withdraw from life and from previously enjoyed activities. In the language forms of FTD, people develop the symptoms of aphasia at the beginning of the disease. They may lose their dictionary and not be able to come up with words, lose their grammar and speak fluently but in a difficult to comprehend manner, or lose their ability to understand the meanings of words. On average, frontotemporal dementia progresses more rapidly than Alzheimer's disease, with the average person living 6 or 7 years with the disease, but the range is very wide. Some people live only 3 years with symptoms, and others live more than 15 years. About one-third of people with frontotemporal dementia have a strong family history of dementia, often beginning in family members in their 50s or 60s. HIV/AIDS. HIV/AIDS, human immunodeficiency virus acquired immune deficiency syndrome, first appeared in the late 1970s. It's caused by a virus, the human immunodeficiency virus, HIV, which alters the immune system and makes it unable to fight off HIV and other infections. As a result, people become vulnerable to infections that their immune system previously had been able to ward off. HIV is spread through sexual intimacy, contact with infected blood or other body tissue, or the use of hypodermic needles previously used by someone infected with the virus. In most countries, all blood used for transfusions is tested for the virus, so transfusions are safe. Those most at risk of contracting the disease are people with multiple sexual partners, intravenous drug users, and children born to infected people. Before the development of drugs that fight HIV, HIV/AIDS usually led to death within several years. Currently, however, treatments for AIDS are so effective that life expectancy for people who continue on treatment is thought to be normal. Before the development of medications called protease inhibitors, HIV/AIDS often caused dementia. HIV-related dementia is now uncommon, but it still occurs in those who cannot or do not take protease inhibitors, those who are infected with forms of HIV that are resistant to protease inhibitors, or those who do not respond to these drugs. Dementia occurs when HIV infects the brain. There is some evidence that the virus specifically attacked certain types of brain cells. Because of their weakened immune system, people who have untreated AIDS may also develop parasitic, fungal, bacterial, or other viral infections of the brain. Cancers caused by viruses also develop in people with HIV/AIDS, and these too can cause dementia and delirium. Delirium is discussed under other brain disorders. Occasionally, the medications used to treat these infections cause delirium. The dementia caused by HIV causes mental and physical slowness and difficulty accessing memory. If a person has a tumor or an infection associated with HIV/AIDS, the symptoms vary because they are dependent on the location of the brain damage. Protease inhibitors not only prevent the development of dementia, but also can reverse dementia after it has developed. As a result, the prognosis of HIV dementia has improved dramatically. Lewy body dementia. First identified in the 1980s, dementia with Lewy bodies may account for 5 to 15% of cases of dementia. The Lewy body is a microscopic abnormality found within brain cells at autopsy. Originally, these abnormal structures were thought to be present only in people with Parkinson's disease, but scientists now recognize that some individuals with dementia have Lewy bodies spread throughout their brains. The symptoms of Lewy body dementia are a mixture of those seen in Alzheimer's disease and the dementia of Parkinson's disease. For this reason, Some scientists doubt that Lewy body dementia is a distinct condition, but there are characteristics that distinguish it from both Alzheimer's dementia and the dementia of Parkinson's disease. For example, about 85% of people with Lewy body dementia experience visual hallucinations, often as a very early symptom, and many people experience wide fluctuations in their level of alertness that last for days. Many people with this illness experience severe adverse side effects from antipsychotic medications. These medicines should be avoided if possible, or used in the lowest possible dose if they are needed to treat delusions or hallucinations. Reassurance about the visual hallucinations, "I know you see little people, but that's part of your illness," or "I know you are upset about those little people in the house, but I had the situation under control," can help the person feel less frightened. People with Lewy body dementia have some symptoms of Parkinson's disease, called Parkinsonism, early in the course of the illness, and they may fall frequently. Stiffness, slowness, and poor balance are common and are likely the cause of the frequent falls. Protecting people from the adverse outcomes of falls, for example, by removing low coffee tables with sharp corners and providing a rolling walker, and cautious use of the medication L-DOPA, Sinemet, may help. Parkinson disease-associated dementia. Parkinson disease is a brain disorder characterized by four symptoms: a rest tremor, rhythmic shaking of the hands when the hands are on a table or in one's lap, generalized body stiffness and rigidity, slowness of movement, bradykinesia, and thinking, bradyphrenia, and poor balance. The dementia caused by Parkinson disease begins one or more years after the onset of these physical symptoms. Slowness of thinking and recall, rather than true inability to remember, is prominent at first, as are difficulties in problem solving and mental flexibility. Visual perception is often impaired early in the disease as well. Speed of thinking and ability to organize thoughts can be improved by anti-Parkinson medications. Primary progressive aphasia. An uncommon first symptom of dementia is loss of the ability to express oneself, experienced by the person as a frustrating inability to find the words he wants to say. Isolated loss of language ability is most commonly the first symptom of the language form of frontotemporal dementia, in which the disease begins in the left temporal lobe. The disease later spreads to other regions of the brain. This causes cognitive impairments in other domains, such as perception, judgment, and memory. It is rare for primary progressive aphasia to be the first symptom of Alzheimer's disease, but some people with primary progressive aphasia are eventually found to have the plaques of Alzheimer's disease by autopsy. In primary progressive aphasia, MRI and PET scans usually show localized areas of abnormality in the left temporal lobe, the part of the brain known to be involved with language performance. Progressive supranuclear palsy. A person who has progressive supranuclear palsy, PSP, has difficulty moving his eyes, and he holds a rigid